This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
And maybe the best moment of the day yesterday actually happened after the game, when Padres players came back out onto the field to tip their caps to the 56th sellout crowd of the season, setting a new all-time Padres attendance record.
By comparison, I saw a stat over the weekend that somebody sent out, like SNY New York, said, oh, the sixth sellout at Citi Field this year. Sixth in New York City. The sixth sellout. So, pretty incredible Padres fans.
After the game, and I forget, I'm sorry, which player it was, but they were interviewing him on ESPN, and he said, I mean, it is so incredible when these fans show up and make this kind of noise. I mean, this is such a great place to play. But there was clearly that when the fans show up, because they haven't done it as consistently as Padres fans have done it. There are other good fan bases who are loud and supportive of their teams.
Sure.
There just hasn't been really any as consistent as Padres fans over these last couple of seasons. Set an attendance record last year, broke it this year. And Padres fans, pretty incredible the way that you have supported this team. And I got the sense, and all teams will thank their fans and, you know, do what they have to do at the end of the season. I got the sense that it was extremely genuine on the part of Mike Shildt and all the players yesterday. They didn't just do it because it's the last game and that's what you're supposed to do. That they really wanted to say thank you, because we're probably not where we are here without your day-in, day-out support, giving us this home field advantage, this lift. You know, when you're tired over 162, but you look up and you see 45,000 out there, you know, that's going to give you that extra edge that you've got to get it done.
And we acknowledge the fans today, and tip of the hat to the fans. I mean, we still got more to come, but let's acknowledge, record-breaking, you know, home attendance record and the crowd that supports us that we're so grateful for, and we're not done, but we do want to. It was good we were able to acknowledge that their support and their passion and their love for us, because it means a lot to us.
You should give him the opportunity Friday to list each one by name.
Each fan.
I want to thank Mike.
Mike, I know you
Fred,
wanted to thank the fans.
John,
if you
want
to single
Tony,
out anyone, go ahead.
Kirsten, Holly, we couldn't have done it without y'all. Just name after name. We're like, all right, Mike, we're leaving for the day. Just, you can keep going right through Craig and Annie's show. Just keep listing them. It was amazing. It was an amazing, amazing stat. You know, 3 million plus out there at little old Petco Park, just crushing it this year. So well done, Padres fans.
Really nice moment. Saturday's game was also good performance, probably the least stressful of the games. Not that it was, you know, certainly decided early, but.
Yeah.
Martin Perez, the guy who probably doesn't have a spot in the playoff rotation at this point, the fifth guy.
Which is so unfortunate, because he's just been so good.
5 1/3, 2 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts. He's 5-5 on the season, but the stat I think that's most critical here is the Padres are now 9-1 in the 10 games he has started since they acquired him at the trade deadline for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Remember, those starts before the trade deadline were being taken by Adam Mazur.
Yeah.
And the Padres were losing most of them.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, flipped it. And now instead of the fifth starter being a black hole, it's a spot where you're winning 90% of the time. And by the way, the one that he lost, he pitched shutout baseball.
Correct.
That was the grand, wasn't that the Grand Slam
grand
game?
Grand Slam game.
Yeah. They were up 3-0. Yeah. That was an easy win. And that's the only one that they have lost that he has started since they acquired him. So what an amazing under-the-radar pickup by A.J. Preller at the trade deadline.
A total throw-in, you know, the comparisons to Rich Hill last year. Like, oh, all right, well, whatever. But the way that he's come in, and again, you watch that in-game interview he did last week, and you go, yep, what a perfect cultural fit for this team. Like, he absolutely came in. He wants to win. He knows the task at hand. He's been amazing. He's been incredible. And whoever would have thought that when you get to the Martin Perez start, you're like, I know exactly what I'm signing up for today. 5 innings minimum. 2 runs max. Like, he's just been so consistent. And really, fun as hell to watch. He's an enjoyable watch. You know, he pounds his own. He had that little that little where you kind of lost the plot there for like a couple
walked
of innings.
Couple guys back to guys. Back. Yeah.
And but other than that, man, he has been phenomenal. So again, credit to him certainly, but credit to Ruben, credit to AJ for picking them up.
Need a contestant for Take on Woods. Going to play here in about 4 or 5 minutes. If you want to call, now's the time. 833-288-0973. It's head to head musical trivia with our champ over here, Stephen Woods. Give us a call. 833-288-0973. You can qualify for our grand prize trip to Las Vegas. Offensively, Padres did play from ahead that game. Xander Bogaerts with the two-run homer in the second inning off Chris Flexen. Got him off to a good start on Saturday night. David Peralta added the solo home run in the fourth. Jackson Merrill, RBI single in the fifth, coming through in the clutch. Padres built that 4-0 lead. Got a little shaky in the bullpen, in the eighth inning especially. Jason Adam, who has been so lights out
almost
good.
Unhittable almost.
Just lost his command a little bit. There were some close pitches in there, but ended up walking home a run in a third of an inning and leaving the bases loaded for Tanner Scott, who comes in and huge pitch there in inducing the double play to get out of the inning, and then ended up finishing off the five-out save. And you're kind of wondering, well, does that mean we've changed closers now that Tanner Scott got his 22nd save? Of course, now in hindsight, we know Robert Suarez got the save yesterday, so now maybe the Padres just have two closers.
We just have closers. We just have extra closers.
For a lot of shortstops, you have a lot of closers.
The team built of comprised entirely of shortstops and closers. All right, I like my chances.
And I thought maybe something to chew on from that game. You saw Elias Diaz hitting his first Padres home run.
Yep.
There in the eighth inning. And while Higgy has established himself as the starter, hasn't been hitting much lately, and Diaz, if he is coming on, you know he's a good defensive catcher as well. I wonder if there's any thought of more playing time for Diaz going forward, including potentially in the postseason, as he becomes more comfortable with some of the guys in the starting rotation as well.
Yeah, and again, it's such a nice thing to have. You do wonder after 156 games, Higgy's taken on a lot more of a workload, I think, than he's accustomed to. And you know, you could be running out of gas a little bit at the end of the year, and which is fine. This is why you have two catchers, and really two capable catchers. I feel really comfortable with either of them in the lineup. Doesn't really matter to me. They're both probably going to hit in the nine hole. So, great. Give us some good defense. Try to throw out a base runner or two. Keep some runs from scoring, you know, on some nasty pitches down in the dirt. Do your job there. I'm not really expecting much offensively from either, Ben. I mean, when you've got the lineup that the Padres have, it's just not going to be an issue going forward, I don't think. You just kind of rotate them and ride with the hot hand and the fresh legs.
All I know is if I am a backup catcher who has been struggling in Major League Baseball, I want AJ Preller to pick me up in the middle of a season.
100%. Yes. It's happened
so much.
Just
show up. I mean, Elias Diaz, Gary Sanchez, Jorge Alfaro. I mean, even
Kyle Higashioka.
Yeah. I mean, where do these guys, they just blossom, for it's temporary.
Yeah.
It's just like,
it was like the definition of a throw-in.
100%.
Like, when that trade got announced, or even when it was being speculated, there was all the concern about, was Michael King, he was the centerpiece, is he going to be involved or not? Is he going to be included by the Yankees? And then you get Higashioka, you're like, who? Like,
well,
do we really need another catcher?
The only thing that was cool about it at the time was, well, at least he knows now three guys that are going to be on our staff, and we all thought Brito and Vasquez and King would. I mean, that we thought legit. That's three, four, five starters. So Higgy's got experience with these guys at least. That was the one kind of selling point. He's going to hit 10 home runs because he always hits 10 home runs. Well, he's exceeded that, and he's had some huge knocks for this team. I would love to see him get it going offensively again, because there was a time where that dude was starting rally after rally and finishing rallies, like clearing the bases and extra base hits. So, again, I'm really comfortable with both of those guys back there, and I think AJ did a really nice job snagging Diaz and of course, snagging Higgy as well.
All right, we will continue. We can talk about Friday's dramatic game in a little bit, but right now we got some callers on the line. Let's get to today's game of Take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Take on Woods brought to you by Valvoline Instant. 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. Let's try line one. Is this David?
Yes, good morning, guys.
Good morning, David. How are you? What's up?
Excellent. Just hanging out.
All right. You've got a chance here to qualify for our two-night stay at the Wynn or Encore Las Vegas and two tickets to the Wynn Las Vegas Spectacular Awakening. Get your tickets now at awakening.com. All you need to do is beat or tie Woods in our five-question musical trivia challenge. He has left the studio. He doesn't hear this part of the game. Five questions, and you get to choose our category. Your choices are Below the Waist, five songs that include a lower half body part in the title, Happy Days, five songs that include the word days, and we've got If at First. We have another five song titles that begin with the word if. We had one last week as well. So Below the Waist, Happy Days, or If at First, David, what would you like to play?
Let's go with If.
If at First. All right. We had one last week. Let's try it again. If at First you don't succeed, then you try another category with song titles that begin with the word if. You'll have 60 seconds, David. If you don't know one, you can pass. We'll come back to it at the end of the clock. First question is the two-second song. Paulie's going to play you some music. You need to give me that title that starts with if and the artist to score that point. Two-parter for the first one. Are you ready to play?
Yep, I'm ready.
Paul, you good? All right. 60 seconds on the clock.
Come on,
Woods,
David.
Woods outside. Your time begins when Paul plays the music, the category if at first. Good luck, David. Let's take on Woods.
Yeah.
Sheryl Crow's final top 10 hit was which song in which she pondered, "Then Why the Hell Are You So Sad?"
Got.
The top charting hit for Matchbox 20, which song did Rob Thomas's write shortly after meeting his future wife, but then was unable to see her for several weeks?
Bad.
Which 1993 song with an eight-word title earned Sting multiple Grammy nominations, including a win for Best Male Vocal Performance?
Go back to the first one again.
Go back. All right, we haven't even got to the fifth one yet. The B-side to And I Love Her, which 1964 Beatles song did John Lennon call his first attempt at a ballad proper?
If I could hold your hand.
Incorrect. Go back to the two-second song. Tough category today, right, David. I'm sorry.
Guys, if you're listening right now in your car, on YouTube, on the app, wherever, we need you to come through a little bit. That's like three or four zeros.
This was a tough category. I think Woods Woods may struggle. Stay on the line, David. Maybe we'll have our first ever 0-0 game. Oof. Have we ever had one? I don't think we have. Did we have one?
I think we have.
Maybe one. It's always possible. Woods doesn't get the category, makes it a little tougher. All right, let's put 60 seconds back on the clock. Woods, your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on David.
If You Leave by OMD.
Correct. Sheryl Crow's final top 10 hit was which song in which she pondered, "Then Why the Hell Are You So Sad?"
If It Makes You Happy.
Correct. The top charting hit for Matchbox 20, which song did Rob Thomas write shortly after meeting his future wife, but was then unable to see her for several weeks?
Pass.
Which 1993 song with an eight-word title earned Sting multiple Grammy nominations, including a win for Best Male Vocal Performance?
Not the Dream of the Blue Turtles.
Pass. The B-side to And I Love Her, which 1964 Beatles song did John Lennon call his first attempt at a ballad proper?
I don't know the category. If I Ever Lose My Faith in You is the
Sting
song.
Correct. That's three. Back to the top charting hits for Matchbox 20, which song did Rob Thomas? All right, you got three, which is a win. David got shut out. It's a tough category. Another if category, if at first. So you got If You Leave by OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, If It Makes You Happy, and you got If I Ever Lose My Faith in You. If You're Gone is Matchbox 20.
Don't know it.
And if
You're Gone.
And If I Fell is the Beatles ballad
proper. I Fell, okay. So, all right.
The chat is lighting you up to come up with some songs from this century, just one time. I mean, what's the
Matchbox 20
song?
Is sort of close to this century, right?
You know, you guys can write categories.
That one was probably late 90s.
You guys can write your own categories.
Early 2000s, maybe?
Send it to Ben. You can do that. People have done that. You can contribute. Right?
Yes, you can.
Yeah,
people
have
sent me categories before. But, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of older music and Take on Woods.
Yeah, there is.
It keeps everybody kind of in the game. Because sure. I'll have to admit that I would think younger people can know older music better than older people
Correct.
Can know newer music. Mm-hmm. Including the person who puts together the categories, who hasn't heard of some of the new songs, makes it harder for me to necessarily include them in some of the questions.
Yeah, I mean, when I was...
I try to, though.
When I was younger, I listened to older music. I'm older, and I listen to older music. That's just how it works.
Now, I put country music in, which almost never gets those right.
I try
to move around some genres. I've done hip-hop. I move them around.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the game's run its course.
Somebody
come up with a better game, we'll do that.
I've done newer categories. No one does well. Woods doesn't do well. The contestants don't do well. It's just been tough.
Yeah, that's fine.
But, Paulie, I certainly understand the complaint.
Hey, I'm just the messenger.
Yeah, don't kill the messenger, Ben.
Fair enough. Former Padre is in the crosshairs of Don't Do This today.
What the hell happened?
This is definitely a talker, guys. This is definitely a talker. What happened to our old pal, CJ Abrams, over the weekend.
That is coming up next after a check of traffic with Kelly. Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
All right, before we get to old friend CJ Abrams, we're going to start Don't Do This with our newer friend, Woods, Stephen Coronado.
Yeah, a lot of people, our buddy Max said, bro, you got to put on Sammy's postgame right now. And I was at home poring over a lineup card for my 6U baseball team, so I couldn't turn it on at the time. But this happened.
Let's go to Coronado. It's Steve on the Padres post-game show. Steve, go ahead.
Hi, Sam. Glorious night. Padres winning, Dodgers losing. And I want to talk about the playoffs that are coming up. I've won a major sports championship myself. And the Padres can get an edge over all the other teams in the playoffs if they learn to do one thing.
I bet I know what it is.
Stealing bases.
I've seen in playoff series so many times where you have a short playoff series and you're in the eighth inning, ninth inning, or extra innings, and you've got a runner at third base with less than two outs, and the hitter at the plate really has no clue because they haven't practiced laying down a bunt for all season long. They have no clue about how to lay down a suicide squeeze, which is about 10 to 20 feet in front of home plate where nobody is, to drive in that winning run. So the Padres, they started practicing on that like 5 minutes a day.
They do.
And were graded on
you know that.
And Mike Schilt got the grades. The Padres would have the edge going into the playoffs to go and win it all and win the World Series 2024 this year.
All right. All right, Steve. Well, hey, you know what? And appreciate the phone call. Steve, you know what? I'll tell you this. During BP, typically, they do at least lay down a bunt or two before they start swinging.
You know,
and, hey, we've seen the Padres bunt quite a bit as of late. So, you know, I'm sure it's something they work on from time to time.
They do.
They not only work on it, they are arguably the best team in baseball at it. At the highest level of baseball that exists.
I think he's just mad that Mike Schilt doesn't tweet out the grades after the practice. You know what I mean? Like, they do this. Against my better judgment, I told Mike Schilt about it. I asked him about it live on the radio, and he said that they do practice it, and they do watch it, and they do work on it, and they do try it a lot. I will tell you this: if they win a World Series on a suicide squeeze, I will eat Paul's hat. Just eat it. Just over ketchup, mustard.
They might win a World Series
100%
on a suicide squeeze bunt because they've done them before this season. successfully.
Yep.
And they practice it.
Yeah.
But as Mike Schultz said, there's only so many hours in the day. And if we spend 30 minutes practicing bunting.
He said five. They do five, at least.
We can't. We won't be able to practice hitting, which is, I think, arguably more important.
I also want to know what major sports championship so badly.
Well, he told me he won the Coronado Golf Championship,
is that what
and then
it
he
is?
Offered to help me with my golf game as well.
Is that a major sports championship?
I don't think that I would consider that one of the majors.
See that trophy over there? Did Paulie and I win a major? Paulie, hold it up for the camera. Did we win a major sports championship?
GD, right, we did.
The lower level 18 single A MSBL championship?
Apparently, Steve won the 1987 Australian Open men's singles tennis title. Oh, no, he didn't.
No, he didn't. And
it was probably Bjorn Borg or something.
Like, if he said, I won the College World Series on a suicide squeeze, then I would be like, all right. But if you won a golf thing, I don't know. You know how I feel about it. It's convoluted.
All right. Let's get to this next story. Came out on Saturday that the Washington Nationals were demoting C.J. Abrams, former Padre and all-star shortstop, for the rest of the season. In fact, they're sending him to their minor league complex back in West Palm Beach, Florida, since the minor league season is over. So he's just going to sit there for
the last week
and go to the complex. Why? Well, I mean, he has been struggling some in the second half of the season.
He had. But as of late, people were posting like, yeah, he was batting like 412 or something over his last 10
so that
12
wasn't
games.
It.
Like, that was not it.
And while Dave Martinez, the manager of the Nationals, said, I'm not going to give specifics or talk about specifics because I need to keep these guys and everything on the down low,
it turns
out that Abrams, during the series against the Cubs, and they had a Friday 2 o'clock game in Chicago.
105, I think.
105? Yeah. Because Central time. 2 o'clock Eastern, 105 Central. Was out the Thursday night before, all the way into Friday morning at the Bally's Casino in the Chicago area, playing roulette and craps. And did not leave until 8 a.m. And team officials weren't too happy about
for
that.
For a 1 o'clock game, 8 a.m., you're still at the casino. It's not the best look. Again,
maybe he just woke up early at like 7 a.m.
and went down to play. Okay.
No, he was there the night before they sent
him. They got pictures of him. Yeah, there's actually photographic evidence. So here's the thing. Anybody thinking that this is a first-time disciplinary offense, I think you're probably mistaken, right? This is not something that happens willy-nilly, as it were. This is maybe an ongoing pattern. I think that inherently he did not break one single law, not one single law.
No, but I think they do have a curfew rule for the Washington Nationals of some sort.
Maybe the Nationals do, but I saw plenty of ex-big leaguers going, what curfew are you talking about? Like,
grown-ups.
Yeah, you're grown-ups.
I have part of me thinking the same thing as well. I mean, if you can go out and produce and perform, and that is what you want to do in your off time, who are the Nationals or anyone else to say what you can and can't do in your time off?
I mean, people were making the comparisons. I guess you guys have never heard of Michael Jeffrey Jordan, who used to not only, before a game, go play 36 holes, he would also crush like 14 beers during that. But he's Michael Jordan. You're not. You're not Michael Jordan. And so I think this is probably a, hey, man, we're really glad to have you, and you're a really good player, but don't forget, you still have a job to do. There's a week left in the season. You're more than welcome to go back, gamble, do whatever you want when the season's over. I understand their position, and I think it is hopefully he learns a valuable lesson from it and says, now you're probably right, man. I should not be out till 8 a.m. When I have a 1 o'clock game.
To just demote him and send him to the complex, that pretty immediately told me, okay, they've told him a few times before, hey, buddy, you can't be out after curfew, you can't be out at the casino, whatever he's been doing, this was not the very first time.
Yeah, Michael G. says, Nationals beat writer said he's had multiple talking to's about his off-the-field activities. I heard some of it when he was here, too. It is what it is, man. That's a really cool profession that you have, and the season is long, and it is arduous. It's tough, 162 games. I can't even pretend to know what that's like. Guy goes out to blow off some steam. You lose track of time in a casino, certainly. It's meant for that. But 8 a.m., you got to have a better, you've got to watch. You've got a phone. You know you need to get your ass back to the hotel and get some rest.
And even if you can perform that way, the optics are really bad.
Yeah, for sure.
Of being out that late. You're in a business that's got fans that see you out there.
I know their season's over, but yeah. You got to be smart. Exactly. You know they're going to get you, you know?
Finally, a quick doo-doo this here on a Monday.
D.D. Mega doo-doo.
Did mention it earlier, but congratulations. Yu Darvish on his 2,000th career Major League strikeout. First Japanese-born pitcher to reach that milestone in the big leagues. But I also wanted to congratulate one Mike Schilt, who with his 90th win of the season yesterday, becomes, out of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of managers who have performed that job at the big league level, just the 14th manager in history to win 90 games in each of his first three full seasons as manager. Went 91 and 71 with the Cardinals in 2019.
First manager to do it with two teams.
And two different teams as well.
I think a bunch of others, there's several others have done it.
You know why that is?
In their first 3 years.
Because every other manager who won 90 games in their first two seasons with a team wasn't fired. They were like happy and kept them.
They stayed there for 3 years.
They stayed there for 3 years. But then after the short season in 2020, went 90 and 72 in 2021. And now 90 and 66 with the Padres here in 2024.
Got a boy, Schilt.
With six more to go. Congratulations to Mike Schilt. A
really
very
cool.
Exclusive group. In fact, a group of one from Paulie's perspective.
I'd like to see him win 96 this year. That would be fantastic.
How fantastic is that?
It would be very fantastic.
They'd be putting up a banner somewhere at Petco Park if they did that.
Correct. That's correct.
And that is Don't and Do This for a Monday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Well, Schilty had to do some managing on Friday night, that's for sure. In the late innings, as the Padres were forced to go extras against the
Chicago White Sox.
Right. Yes, the team that had lost 117 games coming into that series. We'll talk about Friday night's drama when we come back with Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So welcome to the newest Padre. Did not get to see him in the game yesterday, but he was added to the roster beforehand. Nick Ahmed, the shortstop, joins the team. He was activated and added to the 40-man roster as well when Johnny Brito was placed on the 60-day injured list. Mason McCoy was placed on the 10-day injured list to make room on the 26-man roster for Nick Ahmed. Woods, do we expect to see Nick Ahmed playing a key role for the Padres this week and potentially in the postseason?
It's a great question. I'm just happy for Nick Ahmed because now he's played for... Has he played for...
Everyone with the Rockies.
Everybody with the Rockies.
Yeah, okay, in NL West.
Done the Dodgers.
Well, within the last year, he's played for every team. But
Giants,
the Dodgers,
the Diamondbacks, and now the San Diego Padres. I don't know that he would sign with the Rockies unless he got desperate. We had not seen Mason McCoy at all in a while. Ben with Xander sliding over to short, but sure, a guy in the late innings that can absolutely pick it. I mean, two gold gloves. Nick Ahmed doesn't do much well on a baseball field, except he knows how to play shortstop really, really well. So I don't know if he's going to get any
flexibility late in the games. Yeah. If you pinch run for anybody, you can either put Ahmed in at short and you can slide Xander back over to second, or if you're whatever you're doing there gives you some opportunities to move people around.
No doubt. And I think that the flexibility is every championship team has that, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what the first round playoff roster looks like. Do you need a Lockridge and a Wade on the same roster? I'm not sure. You might, but they're going to have some decisions to make. And anytime you can get a two-time Gold Glover to come shore up the defense, I think for not a lot of money, you take it. So I don't know if he's going to be getting starts or anything like that. I would doubt it.
Viva Padres and the chances. I read that Kim is returning. I don't think you read that because I don't think anyone in the Padres knows 100% with certainty that Ha-Sung Kim will be back.
Schilty said he had a really good day. Really, 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 really good day on Friday, I believe. So, maybe, if you want to read between the lines there. But, yeah, I just, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. If Nick Ahmed is the difference maker, fantastic. But I don't see him getting any starts. I think it depends, too, on what happens the next, you know, few games, obviously. So,
I mean, I think he's getting closer to returning, but I still think there are a couple of more hurdles he needs to clear before they're officially ready to welcome him back.
Well, and again, if Mason McCoy's hurt and they said he's got a back strain or something, then yeah, you need another infielder, I think. And so that's fine. Makes sense.
I also don't know that the Padres' current lineup isn't the best lineup that they can put out
there. I know. No kidding.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Ha-Sung Kim comes back, if he's an everyday starter again at shortstop.
I mean, look, you look at yesterday's game and that Baroa throwing 99 miles an hour and Donovan Solano comes in, rips one down the line, and there's your rally starter right there. Donovan Solano's a bat. You know, if you can get him in there as much as you can over the next week and then, of course, in the playoffs, I think you're pretty happy with that. So, yeah, you're going to have to mix and match. But, again, it's just more options for Schilte at this point. So the lineup looks great. I mean, when Jake Cronenworth, who's scuffling right now, he gets a knock off of Garrett Crochet, which has got to be the gnarliest AB for a lefty, that one of them that you can take in the big leagues. Maybe number one. I mean, who's a tougher, nastier left-handed pitcher than that guy? He's filthy. Of course, he gets a knock off him. But, yeah, man, if you got Jake Cronenworth hitting in the eight hole, it's a pretty good lineup.
All right, we will talk about that night, the Garrett Crochet matchup on Friday that turned out to need 10 innings to decide, right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
Runner on second, two down. Here's the ninth pitch of the at-bat. Sosa swings, hits it in the air to deep left field. Profar is back to watch. It's going to go. A two-run homer for Lenin Sosa, and the White Sox down to their final strike have tied it here in the ninth inning.
Well, that was unfortunate on Friday night when you felt like the Padres, nothing was going to stop them. Once Jackson Merrill blooped in that two-run double or single, whatever it was, and they scored, you felt like, all right, they've got this one. Bullpen did its job. They're getting all the way to Suarez in the ninth inning. Gets the first two outs, and you're, okay, here we go. And then, boom, walk, two-run home run. And all of a sudden, it is stress time at Petco Park. Woods, you were at that game, correct?
Yes. It was nauseating.
I didn't see the proof of life post at the end of the 10th inning.
You didn't ask for one.
I didn't.
No.
Were you there?
No.
No.
I was on my way home. Been a long day. It was a 3 a.m.er.
Yeah.
You don't want me there. I'm bad. I'm such bad luck. I probably won't go to any games. I really am. I just feel like I'm bad luck. So you want me? I go to start. I was there for a while. I was there to like the 7th. Which is a long time for me. And now about the 8th. And then I started.
You saw Jackson Merrill's.
Well, what happened?
You saw his two RBI.
Yeah, I walk out and I start talking to people and shooting the breeze and then kind of matriculate my way down to the parking lot and finally get out of there. A little bit of traffic. But yeah, man, it's.
Saw a good pitching performance from Joe Musgrove as well as Garrett Crochet. 6 innings, 4 hits, 9 strikeouts. Gave his team a real good shot to win that game. But you missed the fireworks at the end.
Yeah, I don't. I watched Garrett Crochet pitch, and I thought, holy cow, I know he's got all the, you know, he's a converted reliever. Looks pretty good. He's going to have how many strikeouts in 140 innings or something, like over 200 or 200? I mean, he's nasty. He's one of the nastiest pitchers I've seen this year. And they had no chance against him. I mean, he was absolutely filthy.
Luckily, they're being careful with him because they took him out after just 52 pitches in 4 innings. You hate to think they had to face 7 or 8 innings of that guy because they may have never scored against Garrett Crochet. But after Robert Suarez allowed the home run, and we talked a little bit about him bouncing back yesterday with the save and mixing up his pitches a little bit, not just going fastball, especially on a long at-bat. When you get to 9 and 10 pitches, can't let the same major league batter time you up 10 times and then, you know, get a chance to hit a home run. That's baseball 101 right there.
Yeah.
But what you did see then in the top of the 10th inning, I thought the most impressive part of that game, Adrian Morejon coming in with the free runner on second base.
Brilliant.
And yes, it's not a good White Sox lineup, but that is as high of a leverage situation as Morejon has seen. And he's gotten his chances, especially earlier in the year before the trade deadline at a few, you know, 7th, 8th inning setup guys. He's been in extra innings, but this one in particular to me with, you know, the pressure of the playoff chase and knowing you certainly – you don't want to win every game of this series, but you certainly don't want to lose the first game of this series. To get through that inning and give the Padres a chance to win it in the bottom of the 10th, that's got to be a huge confidence boost for Adrian Morejon and for the Padres in Adrian Morejon.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, another good outing yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yesterday. He's been great. He was great. He's had a couple of hiccups this year. Who doesn't? What reliever does not? And is kind of finding a little role there and earning some of Mike Schilt's trust. And, so yeah, man, it's all good right now. It's all good right now with six left to play. And that's going to be interesting to see how they deploy that bullpen this week. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, just all of it. I mean, this week of baseball, we're all treated to, this is basically playoffs start tomorrow. I mean, that's kind of how it feels. And you saw it around baseball this weekend. The Mets-Phillies game last night, I obviously have a rooting interest. But when Matt Strom struck out, did Alonzo? I don't know. When Matt Strom had the big K to end the inning, like, I found myself yelping at the TV. I mean, we were all treated to a full extra week of this. It's going to be better.
I mean, look,
it's gut check time.
If your goal as a fan was just to get into the dance,
yeah, you're good.
You can kind of coast this
week. Yeah, you can coast this week.
I mean, we talked about it earlier, 99.99% chance of getting into the playoffs.
You're getting in.
I would probably tell you that every single player involved with the Padres, coaching staff, everybody, they're not coasting.
I don't know.
The division, a bye, like a one or a two seed, like it's all still in front of them.
It's right there.
So, yeah, these games are going to matter.
And now that you control it, you know, hey, we control it. We don't really need any help. We just go out and win one game and then we're in. I don't know, man. I got a DM yesterday from somebody I was in line at the grocery store. He said, Woodsy, I'm going up to the game in L.A. Can you encourage fans to go up and flood Dodger Stadium? And I said, I can do my best. But you guys can go up to L.A. and root on the boys.
My buddy invited me to Thursday night. I said, no, thank you.
I mean, I'm sure there will be some Padres fans who planned in advance to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know that last minute it's going to be that possible. I assume the Dodgers fans know how big this series is as well, and there will be a lot of them who will be going to those games knowing that this is a huge series. They're trying to clinch, by the way. They can clinch the division. They've already clinched a playoff spot, but they can clinch the division by winning the series. If they take two out of three from the Padres, they will clinch the NL West. Anything less, and it'll wait until at least the weekend if they get that opportunity. Of course, if the Padres sweep, the Padres will move into first place. They'll have the tiebreaker and will be matched with the Dodgers with the final three. And all they'll have to do is match the Dodgers over those last three games. The Dodgers will go to Coors Field. The Padres, of course, wrap up in Arizona at Chase Field against the Diamondbacks. But if they win those next three, they'll have their destiny in their own hands.
Rockies played them pretty tough, had a chance to win yesterday. I turned that game on after the Padre game ended and clinging to a one-run lead. And,
very similar to the previous game, which I watched as well, where they had the one-run lead but then added on the Charlie Blackmon home run in the top of the ninth.
Yeah.
This time they didn't add on, and it was one-run game with Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman scheduled to come up in the ninth inning.
Yeah, and again, you know, this is, I understand it. I understand you've got some pitching injuries and all of that, but still not going to feel sorry for you guys, man.
Gritty underdogs.
You look at what steps up to the plate in the bottom of the ninth inning, and it's Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts. You didn't need to get to Freddie Freeman and Will Smith and the rest of the crew. You look at their bullpen, and I know they've faltered a little bit this year as well, as does every pen. I see just star after star after star, guys that throw hard. No one really can feel sorry for you. You really can't, because you can't give me, in the 6 years of us covering this team, you can't give me how smart, diligent, on point, brilliant, deep you are. That's all I hear. And I've heard it from hosts on this station. I've heard it on hosts on other station. I hear you read it in the newspaper. You can't have it both ways. If you ran out of pitching at the end of the year, nobody's going to feel sorry for you, because you still have the best player in the world. In the world. And behind him, maybe the second best player in the world. So, listen, it just, Watching that yesterday, go, yeah, why would anyone feel sorry for these guys?
I was certainly hoping that the Rockies could get through that inning. I wasn't expecting it, though.
There's no way.
In fact, I don't know what the the StatCast win percentage said, but I wouldn't have been surprised if the Dodgers were favored to win the game, even down one going to the bottom of the ninth inning with those three guys coming up.
Correct.
And honestly, when Shohei and Mookie hit the home runs, it was like, yeah, that's pretty much what I was
expecting. That's exactly what I expected.
Not shocked at all. So that kept the lead at three. Padres did get some help from the Brewers, finally, who had dropped the first three games at home to the Diamondbacks. Thanks a lot, Milwaukee. They rally from an 8-0 deficit yesterday in the third inning to pull off a 10-9 win with four runs in the bottom of the eighth and at least salvage one, which knocks the Diamondbacks three games behind the Padres and Mets, both three games behind the Padres in the race, at least for the first wild card spot and home field advantage. So Padres do have a good cushion now, three games going into this last week to make sure at least they're going to get games at home at Petco Park in the playoffs.
Anything can happen, though, man.
Anything can happen. All right, we'll come back. Second half of Ben and Woods. Sammy Levitt's going to join us coming up at 8:35. Talk more Padres baseball, get into maybe a little bit of football as well. All ahead next here on 97.3 The Fan. Don't go away.